I'm not a big fan of shopping malls, but it's dangerous to do anthropology on an empty stomach. So I decided to order a kebab and a salad, which was better than I expected. So now we're good to go. I was out in the field doing research, and an artificial Mayan replica caught my eye, so I decided to investigate. While it wasn't a particularly good replica, what caught my attention was that it was depicted with blue eyes. While this attribute might seem out of place for what is supposed to be a Mesoamerican artifact, in actuality, it is more accurate than one would expect, given that the actual myths and legends of the New World speak of a serpent or snake deity that had blue eyes. Called Kukulcan by the Maya and Quetzalcoatl by the Aztec, this textbook issued by the Secretary of Education of Mexico is standard in all Mexican schools and depicts the serpent god or plumed serpent as a bearded blonde man. This mural is called The Legend of Quetzalcoatl by Diego Rivera, located at the National Palace on Mexico City's main square, the official residence for the President of Mexico. This site has been a place for the ruling class of Mexico since the Aztec Empire, and much of the current palace's building materials are from the original one that belonged to the 16th century leader Moctezuma II. And this mural is in Cholula, Puebla, in central Mexico, and it's also of a blonde, bearded Quetzalcoatl. The world-famous explorer, Thor Heyerdahl, claimed that in ancient Incan legends, there was a sun god named Contiki Viracocha, who was the supreme head of the mythical fair-skinned people in Peru. The original name for Viracocha was Contiki or Ilotiki, which means Sun Tiki or Fire Tiki. Contiki was high priest and sun king of these legendary white men who left enormous ruins on the shores of Lake Titicaca. The legend continues with the mysterious bearded white men being attacked by a chief named Kari, who came from the Coquimbo Valley. They had a battle on an island in Lake Titicaca, and the fair race was massacred. However, Contiki and his closest companions managed to escape and later arrived on the Pacific coast. The legend ends with Contiki and his companions disappearing westward out to sea. When the Spaniards came to Peru, Heyerdahl asserted that the Inca told them that the colossal monuments that stood deserted about the landscape were erected by a race of white gods who had lived there before the Inca themselves became rulers. The Incas described these white gods as wise, peaceful instructors who had originally come from the north in the morning of time and taught the Incas primitive forefathers architecture as well as manners and customs, and they were unlike other Native Americans in that they had white skin and long beards and were taller than the Inca. The Inca said that the white gods had then left as suddenly as they had come and fled westward across the Pacific. After they had left, the Inca themselves took over power in the country. In fact, the name America was not an ode to the Italian explorer Amerigo Vespucci, as we've been taught, but instead after the Peruvian god Amaru. According to Manly P. Hall, author, Rosicrucian, and honorary 33rd degree Freemason, quote, "The name America is derived from the god Quetzalcoatl in Mexico, and in Peru he was called Amaru. From the latter name comes our word America. Amaruca is literally translated land of the plumed serpent. The priests of this god of peace once ruled both Americas." There should be a link in the description to a video I did several years ago on the Chacapoyas, or Mysterious Cloud People of Peru, a civilization that predated the Inca and were conquered by them shortly before the Spanish arrived. They were fair-skinned, and many had blonde or red hair. I've also discussed ancient transatlantic contact and the numerous Mesoamerican myths and depictions of bearded gods or teachers that helped establish agricultural civilization in the Americas in antiquity. It is from this context that one should question if this ancient serpent deity, or winged serpent, was symbolic of a priest class which was revered as a serpent race, which did not represent reptilians, but a human race, which disseminated the very same mystery religion also associated with the snake in places like Mesopotamia, India, China, and Egypt. That said, I'd like to play an excerpt from a broadcast by the late Bill Cooper on this topic. The video footage is of several cities in Mexico to help set the ambiance. I hope you enjoy it.
Tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, comes from a book by Manly P. Hall named America's Assignment with Destiny. Three great cultural heroes were associated with the origin of Mayan civilization. Votan, who founded the Votanic Empire, seated at Palenque, Itzamna, the Yucatecan hero, and Kukulcan, whose worship extended throughout the Central American area. All three came from a remote region lying eastward, introducing arts and sciences and founded religious cults, or mysteries. From the legendary histories of these persons, they should be included as adepts or initiates of ancient secret schools, possibly Atlantean. In a book written in the Quichean language and attributed to Votan, the Great One declared him self a snake. A descendant of Imos in the line of Khan, he came to America by the command of God from a distant place. He ultimately founded Palenque and built a temple with many subterranean chambers, which was called the House of Darkness. Here, he deposited the records of his nation in the keeping of certain aged men called guardians. There is a legend, folks, that this Votan was the grandson of Noah. The original book containing this report was in the possession of Nunez de la Vega, Bishop of Chiapas, but he destroyed it with the other native manuscripts which he was able to accumulate. Fortunately, however, it had been copied by Aguilar. Itzamna, according to Cogulodo, was a priest who came with the migrations from the east. He was the son of the supreme deity, Hunabku, or the Holy One. Itzamna is pictured as an ancient man with a very prominent and strangely shaped nose, either toothless or with one crooked fang. Likenesses of him have been found indicating his birth from a plant growing from the earth. He is also shown rising from the mouth of a serpent or a turtle to symbolize that he came from the sea. He healed the sick and restored the dead to life. He lived, according to the records, to a great age and was said to have been buried at Izamal, or Itzamal, where his tombs became places of pilgrimages. Itzamna was sometimes called the Skillful Hand, and after his death, his body was divided. His skillful hand was placed in one temple, his heart in another, and the rest of his remains in a third. One of the best known of his emblems was a Tau, or T-cross. It is now generally admitted that the Quetzalcoatl of the Nahuatlan people, the Gucumats of the Quiches, and the Kukulcan of the more southern Mayas were one person. In each language, the word signifies feathered, plumed, or winged serpent. This title may have resulted from Quetzalcoatl casting his lot among or gathering his first followers from the descendants of Votan. This tribal group had the serpent as its heraldic device. at a remote time, this semi-mystical, semi-divine priest-initiate, Quetzalcoatl, came from the fabled land of the seven colors and established his right at Tula and Cholula. Quetzalcoatl was the initiate philosopher and teacher of the Nahuatlan tribes of central Mexico. Among the appellations of this priest, prophet, king are, quote, he who was born of the virgin, unquote, quote, lord of the winds, unquote, and, quote, the divine incarnation, unquote. Quetzalcoatl was the son of the universal creator god and the virgin, Xochiquetzal, and his conception was made known by an ambassador from the god of the Milky Way. Torquemada, in his Indian Monarchies, described a band of people who came from the north dressed in long black robes. Arriving at Tula, these strangers were well received, but finding the region already thickly populated, they continued to Cholula. These wanderers were great artists and skilled in working metals. Quetzalcoatl was their leader. Mendieta, in his Ecclesiastical History, described Quetzalcoatl as a white man with a strong formation of body, broad forehead, large eyes, and a flowing beard. He wore a mitre on his head and was dressed in a long white robe reaching to his feet and covered with a design of red crosses. In his hand, he held a sickle. His habits were ascetic. He never married and was most chaste and pure in his life, and it is said to have endured penance in a neighboring mountain, not for its effect upon himself, mind you, but as an example to others. He condemned sacrifices except of fruit or flowers, and was known as the god of peace, for when he addressed on the subject of war, he is reported to have stopped his ears with his fingers. Fray Bernardino de Sahagún described Quetzalcoatl as very homely, with a long head and a very long beard. There was a recumbent statue of him in the temple at Tula, which was always covered with blankets. His vassals, writes the good Fray, were all workmen in the mechanic arts and skillful in cutting the green stones called chalchivites, also in the art of smelting silver and making other objects. All these arts had their origin and commencement with Quetzalcoatl, who had houses made with these precious green stones called chalchivites, and others made of silver, still others made of red and white shells, others all made of boards, and again others of turquoises, and some all made of rich plumes. Quetzalcoatl also owned all the wealth of the world in gold, silver, and the green stones called chalchivites, and other precious things, and had a great abundance of cocoa trees of different colors, which are called Xochicacatlau. The said vassals of Quetzalcoatl were also very wealthy, and did not lack anything at all. They never suffered famine or lack of corn. In fact, they never ate even the small ears of corn, but rather heated their baths with them, using them instead of firewood. It is specifically mentioned by Sahagún that Quetzalcoatl created and built houses under the earth. Now, traces of subterranean grottos and rooms have been discovered in the vicinity of most of the architectural monuments of the Nahuas. There is a vast complex of such apartments near the Pyramid of the Sun at San Juan Teotihuacan. The Amerindians believed the serpent to be an earth dweller, and it is quite possible that the accounts implied these subterranean and secret places to be chambers of initiation into the mysteries of the cult. According to de Bourbourg, the Mexican demigod Botan made a journey through a subterranean passage which, running underground, terminated at the root of heaven. This passage was a snake hole, and Botan was admitted because he was himself a son of the snake. Quetzalcoatl appeared as the great sorcerer, magician, or necromancer. He performed miracles, and upon his departure, his secrets were entrusted to an order of priests governed by a hierophant or master. This priesthood practiced the arts and sciences, treated the sick, administered sacraments, and were diviners and prophets. Landa gives some consideration to the activities of these religious orders. Lucien Diart summarizes the available data thusly. The most contradictory ideas have been current in regard to this divinity, who now considered of celestial origin and now regarded as a man who had acquired the immortality of the gods, seems in reality to be a union of several personages. He certainly belongs to a race other than the one he civilized, of that there can be no doubt. But what was his country? He died announcing that he would return at the head of white-faced men. And we have seen that the Indians believed his prophecy fulfilled when the Spaniards landed on their shores. And of course, we have seen the consequences of that action. According to Sahagun, the most usual ornaments of the images of Quetzalcoatl were a mitre spotted like the skin of a tiger, a short embroidered tunic, turquoise earrings, and a golden collar supporting fine shells. The legs of these images were encased in gaiters of tiger skins, and on their feet were black sandals. A shield hung from the left arm, and in the right hand was a scepter ornamented with precious stones, an emblem which terminated in a crook like a bishop's crozier. Quetzalcoatl is credited with the invention of the pictorial or hieroglyphical method of writing. And especially is his name associated with the Tonalamatl, our Book of Fate. This was more than a civil calendar and was reserved for the calculation of human destiny and prophecies concerning the future of the state. It was used by master magicians, the chief of whom was an astrological adept credited with extraordinary occult powers. While it is likely that Quetzalcoatl brought the Tonalamatl back to Mexico after his journey among the Mayas, a people already advanced in such matters, the Aztecan legend has been summarized by Mendieta. The gods had created a man, Axomoco, and a woman, Cipactonatl, as the progenitors of the human race. They, according to the legend, dwelt in a cave at Cuernavaca, and in order to regulate their lives, these two resolved to devise a calendar. Cipactonatl felt that her descendant, Quetzalcoatl, should be invited to participate in the project, because she was the mother of all the living and a great prophetess. Cipactonatl was privileged to select and write the first sign or day symbol of the calendar. The others followed until the 13 signs were completed. Sahagun, in his general history, gave a number of details of the struggle between Quetzalcoatl, the civilizer, and Tezcatlipoca, who apparently signified the primitive and sanguine religious cult of Mexico. The old priesthood, which practiced human sacrifice and adhered to a policy of war and destruction, resented the peaceful and gentle faith brought by Quetzalcoatl. In the end, Tezcatlipoca, the personification of the sorcerers, contrived to poison the god king, which implies that his doctrines were corrupted by false teachings and interpretations. The poison worked slowly and insidiously until Quetzalcoatl, realizing that he could not combat successfully the old perverted priesthood, left Cholula, ordering his palaces of gold and silver, turquoise, and precious stones to be set afire. Accompanied by a procession of musicians, youths, and maidens bearing flowers, and flocks of singing birds, the old adept journeyed to Cholula, where the great pyramid was built in his honor. It was written that the Cholulans deeply admired the great priest because of the purity of his life, the kindliness of his manner, and his doctrines of peace and brotherhood. He remained with them for nearly 20 years, slowly sickening from the poison which was destroying his body. At last, he realized that his ministry was coming to an end, so he continued his long journey toward the mysterious city of Tlapalan, from which he had come. He turned toward the east and proceeded to the sea, which he reached at a point a few miles south of Veracruz. Here he blessed the four young men who had accompanied him and bade them return to their homes, with his promise that one day in the future he would return and restore his kingdom among them. Then the old and weary man called to the sea, and out of the waters came a raft of serpents. He stepped upon this strange craft and was carried away into the land of the sun's beginning. He left behind him a priesthood that perpetuated with esoteric rites the mysteries of the feathered serpent. There is every indication, folks, that the cult of Quetzalcoatl was kept secret, a precaution necessary in the face of the opposition of the primitive indigenous sects. There are several accounts of the death or departure of Quetzalcoatl. The conflict is due in part to the legends being derived from different tribes and in part to the Spanish methods of gathering the reports. Now, these invaders took slight interest in the native traditions until they had destroyed most of the available sources of information. Later, even the converted Indians were uncertain of their tribal history. There's reason to believe, however, that some sacred records were intentionally suppressed and were never available to the missionaries. The people of Mexico claim to have sacred accounts of the mysteries of their religion and the origin of their race. There's mention of the divine book written by Tezcucan, a wise man or wizard whose name means Lord of the Great Hand. This was supposed to contain the account of the migration of the Aztecs from Asia. Baron de Waldeck claimed that the book had once been in his possession. De Bourbourg thought it was the Dresden Codex. The Bustamante wrote that native historians had a copy in their possession at the time of the fall of Mexico. Now, there is good probability that manuscripts of great value survived the Spanish colonial period and are still available to certain qualified persons. Augustus Leplongeon, known to the Yucatecans as Great Blackbeard, was one of the few Americanists to be accepted into the confidence of the ever-reticent Indians. They told him enough to convince a thoughtful man of the existence of esoteric schools in the Mayan area. Quote, that sacred mysteries, unquote, writes Leplongeon, have existed in America from times immemorial, there can be no doubt. Even setting aside the proofs of their existence that we gather from the monuments of Uxmal and the descriptions of the trials of initiation related in the sacred book of the Quiches, we find vestiges of them in various other countries of the Western continent. The rites and ceremonies of initiation were imported in Peru by the ancestors of Manco Capac, the founder of the Inca dynasty, who were colonists from Central America, as we learn from an unpublished manuscript written by a Jesuit father, Reverend Anello Oliva, at the beginning of the year 1631 in Lima, and now it resides in the library of the British Museum in London. A number of authors have tried to prove that Quetzalcoatl was a foreigner who, reaching the shores of the New World at an early time, attempted the civilization of the aboriginal tribes. Lord Kingsborough favored the possibility that this wanderer was actually the Apostle Thomas, and that the ancient Central American Indians came under Christian or Jewish influence. Always deeply concerned with the possibilities of linking the worship in the Americas with the religions of the Near East, his lordship writes, the Messiah is shadowed in the Old Testament under many types, such as those of a lion, a lamb, a rose, the morning star, or the planet Venus, otherwise called Lucifer, the sun, light, a rock, a stone, the branch, the vine, wine, bread, water, life, the way, and he is there recognized in the triple character of a king, a priest, and a prophet. It is very extraordinary that Quetzalcoatl, whom the Mexicans believed equally to have been a king, a prophet, and a pontiff, should also have been named by them Seacatl, or Keacatl, or the Morning Star. Lavizcalpantecutli, or light. Mexitli, or the vine. For Torquemada said that the core of the aloe from which the Mexicans obtained wine was so called. Votan, or the heart, metaphorically signifying life. And Toilietl, manjar, de Nestra Veda, bread for his body made of dough, was eaten by the Mexicans. Las Casas, quoting Padre Francisco Hernandez, says that an old Yucatecan described the ancient religion of his people thus. That they recognized and believed in God who dwells in heaven, and that this God was Father and Son and Holy Spirit, and that the Father was called Icona, who had created men and all things, that the Son was called Bacab, and that he was born of a virgin called Tiberius, who is in heaven with God. The Holy Spirit they tamed Ichuik. The son Bakab was scourged and crowned with thorns, was tied upon a cross with extended arms where he died. But after 3 days he arose and ascended into heaven to be with his father. Dr. Alexander, who reports this story in his book, is inclined to feel that it is confused and probably distorted by the Spanish recorder. On the other hand, the universal distribution of the basic theme may be explained another way. Among the Lacandones, Quetzalcoatl is still represented as a snake with many heads. There is an account that this snake was killed and eaten at times of great national peril, especially at eclipses, which were regarded as portents of disaster. It was believed by the Mayas that Kukulkan descended invisibly from the sky and personally received the offerings during great feasts held in his honor. For details of this, consult The Mythology of All Ages, Volume 11, Latin American, by Hartley Burr Alexander. Now, Daniel Brenton, in his Essays of an Americanist, devoted some thought to the magical powers attributed to the priests of Central America. It is evident from available authorities that the Mayas and Aztecs had an extensive body of legendary and lore, which originated in the mysteries of their religions and proves the existence of an elaborate system of secret rites and ceremonies. In the form of a feathered snake, Quetzalcoatl overshadowed a dynasty of rulers and priests, some of whom later assumed his name and even his mask symbol. These later Quetzalcoatls have been confused, like the several Zoroasters of Persia, into one person, with a resulting conflict in dates. Recent excavations would indicate that the cult of the feathered serpent was established before the beginning of the Christian era and did not arise in the 10th or 11th century AD as held by some modern archaeologists. In fact, it is more likely that the ancient hero was said to have been reborn or to have overshadowed a later leader of the nation. All the accounts imply that the religious order which served the mysteries of Quetzalcoatl was long established, and those who follow in the way which he had prescribed lived most severe lives. Children were consecrated to his temples from their birth and were marked by a special collar. At the end of the second year, the child was scarified in the breast. When it was 7 years old, it entered a seminary where it took vows covering personal conduct and public duties, including prayers for the preservation of its family and its nation. There were many of these priestly brotherhoods, and the Spanish missionaries, in spite of their theological prejudices and intolerances, were forced to admit that the Aztecan priests were excellent scholars and lived austere and pure lives. It was said of these missionaries that in Quetzalcoatl, who taught charity, gentleness, and peace, they thought they saw a disciple of Jesus Christ. The kings of the Mexican nations, like those of ancient Egypt, were also initiates of the state mysteries. Torquemada described the attainments of Nezahualpilli, the king of Texcoco. This learned man gathered about him masters of the science and arts and gained a wide reputation as an astrologer and seer. When Montezuma was elected to rule over the complex of Nahuatlan nations, King Nezahualpilli stood before the young man and congratulated the entire nation for having selected such a ruler, whose deep knowledge of heavenly things ensured to his subjects his comprehension of those of an earthly nature. The interpreter of the collection of Mendoza described Montezuma as by nature wise, an astrologer and philosopher, and skilled and generally versed in all the arts, both in those of the military as well as those of a civil nature, and from his extreme gravity and state, the monarchy under his sway began to verge towards empire. The great serpent clothed in Quetzal plumes certainly belonged to another race and came from an unknown country. Lucien Biart says, "It is an incontestable fact that Quetzalcoatl created a new religion based upon fasting, penitence, and virtue. In skillful trades and in metalworking, this Amerindian savior reminds one of the craftsmen of Tyre who cast the ornaments for Solomon's temple. As a benefactor of his people, as a liberator of men's minds and hearts, this Nahuatlan demigod certainly revealed the attributes of the master builder." Folks, are you beginning to hear the implications that this may be connected to the ancient mysteries and directly to Freemasonry, for that is exactly what Manly Hall is putting across. Scattered through the jungle of Yucatan and extending northward into Chiapas and southward into Honduras and Guatemala are the remains of ancient cities and the ruins of old cultural centers, religious or educational, dedicated to scientific research and the investigation of the spiritual mysteries of human life. These shrines and temples are adorned with numerous religious emblems and figures and closely resemble the temples and schools of the esoteric tradition, which were scattered through the Mediterranean countries, North Africa, and the Near East. The Aztecs, inhabiting the Valley of Mexico, certainly derived much of their cultural impetus from the more highly civilized Mayas. These Nahuas practiced elaborate rites and ceremonies and recognized a large pantheon of divinities. It seemed unlikely that the Aztecs patterned their religious concepts from some inferior cultural tradition. There are positive indications that the tribes of central Mexico had received an important intellectual stimulus from the Mayas and even found it expedient to acknowledge this indebtedness. The physical remains of the Maya civilization are sufficiently impressive to indicate a highly advanced people whose religious institutions and rites had reached a considerable degree of refinement. Most early writers, in an attempt to estimate the cultural attainments of these nations, have been over-influenced by the early theologians and scientific enthusiasts who invaded the field with a variety of concepts and, of course, preconceptions. The empires of the Mayas and Aztecs were resplendent with edifices dedicated to their faiths. There were magnificent shrines, temples, and altars, some to sanguinary deities and others to benign and kindly gods. The state mysteries, however, were seldom performed in the sanctuaries of popular worship. Neophytes traveled to remote places, and if they went uninvited, they seldom, if ever, returned. Throughout the jungle are the ruins of extraordinary buildings constructed for unknown purposes, the mysteries of Xibalba, as recorded in the Popol Vuh, and traditionally associated with the culture hero Votan, were given in such an architectural complex which served as an entrance to a mysterious world beyond the dimensions of the material mind. Such gateways existed in all the old countries where the mystery religion originally flourished. Obviously, archaeologists cannot discover the secret rites merely by grubbing among the overturned and broken stones. As the priesthoods were not considerate enough to label their monuments, there is little left today even to excite curiosity. Fortunately, however, the esoteric tradition survives in the racial subconscious, whatever that is, and its violated schools and colleges need not be physically restored. When such restoration is attempted, the buildings usually reveal that they were designed as symbols of the cosmos. If the mystery system existed in the Western Hemisphere, as the landmarks indicate, it must have produced its initiates and adepts. These, in turn, became the leaders and saviors of their peoples. The wonder-working hero, whose deeds enriched all tribal traditions, always and everywhere, performed the same miracles, possessed the same powers, and made the same personal sacrifices. The mystery school required not only a hierarchy for its maintenance and perpetuation, but also appropriate places of initiation, partly underground or adjacent to grottos and caverns. It required also a body of lore peculiarly significant, participation in which conferred special rights and privileges. A people which had reached the mental platform of the Mayas would not have accepted a philosophy of life that was without profound and significant values. Pagan priesthoods did not initiate those of feeble mind, but selected for spiritual advancement persons of high attainment and mature judgment. Albert Reveille, in the Hibbard Lectures, 1894, notes of the religion of the plumed serpent. There was something mysterious and occult about the priesthood of this deity, as though it were possessed of divine secrets or promises, the importance of which it would be dangerous to undervalue. It is fortunate, indeed, that at least one manuscript relating to the religious mysteries formerly practiced in the Mayan area has been recovered. The Popol Vuh are the Senate Book of the Quiches. The record of the community has survived the numerous vicissitudes which have conspired to prevent the perpetuation of the literary monuments of Central America. It was tolerated by the early missionaries, who, observing certain similarities to their own scriptures, preserved the work as a means of persuading the Indians to a more speedy baptism. In the 17th century, it was rescued from a fate worse than oblivion by the Dominican monk Don Ramon de Ordonez y Aguirre, Dean and Chancellor of the Archbishopric of Ciudad Real. The work was deposited in the library of the convent at Chichicastenango by its scholiast, Zeminis, where it remained until 1830. The manuscript of the Popol Vuh was rediscovered about 1855 by Dr. Shazer in the library of the University of San Carlos, Guatemala City. Through the industry and scholarship of that ardent antiquarian, the Abbe Brasseur de Bourbourg, this mysterious book of the Quiches came at last to the French language, where it lingered for years, awaiting English translation. Dr. Scherzer was responsible for a Spanish version published in Vienna in 1856. The first English translation has remained practically unknown to students of Central American archaeology, as it appeared serially in The Word, a magazine devoted to theosophical and related subjects. The translation was made by Kenneth S. Guthrie, M.A., Ph.D., M.D., and was based upon the French text. A new English translation from the Spanish of Adrian Recinos has just been issued by the University of Oklahoma Press, and folks, that was in 1951. This version is by Delia Goetz and Sylvanus G. Morley and includes important introductory and commentary material. Writing under the pseudonym, Aretas James Price issued part of the Popol Vuh with learned commentaries under the title The Book of the Azure Veil. This ran in Lucifer, a theosophical magazine, between September 1894 and February 1895. It concluded with a note that circumstances made it impossible for the translator to finish the work. Price suggests that the god Quetzalcoatl was known in Peru under the name of Amaru. He writes, "From the latter name comes our word America. Amaruca is literally translated land of the plumed serpent. The priests of this god of peace, from their chief center in the Cordilleras, once ruled both Americas. All the red men who have remained true to the ancient religion are still under their sway. One of the strong centers was in Guatemala, and of their order was the author of the book called Popol Vuh." Although Dr. Scherzer published his copy under the title Las Historias del Origen de los Indios de Guatemala por el R.P.F. Francisco Zeminis, this is misleading. Zeminis was not the author, but acted in the capacity of scribe, translator, and commentator. The work is said to have been compiled originally in the 17th century by a Guatemalan who had been converted to Christianity. Most American Indians are unsatisfactory converts, for they accept new beliefs without discarding old convictions. This is a most fortunate state of affairs, as there is little indication that the indigenous mythology has been compromised. The source of the material compiled by this convert is completely unknown, but it could well have been derived from a secret book or from oral tradition guarded in the sanctuaries of the mysteries. Now, to have secured it, the compiler must himself have been a priest or initiate. Certainly, the Popol Vuh is by far the outstanding available text on pre-Columbian mythology and cosmology existing. The Quichean scribe, in his introduction to the Popol Vuh, writes, "The following is what we shall write, and we place it in writing because since the Word of God has been promulgated, and hereafter during the cycle of Christianity, the book of the azure-green veil is no longer to be seen, in which it could be clearly perceived that it had come from the further shore of the sea, which book has been called the record of our existence in the overshadowing world, and how we there beheld light and life." The heroes of the Popol Vuh were subjected to several ordeals of tests of courage, fortitude, and skill. The seventh test took place in the House of the Bat. This was a subterranean labyrinth inhabited by weird monsters ruled over by Gamazots, a fearful creature with the body of a man and the wings and the head of a bat. Naturally, the account is clothed in the culture symbolism of the Mayas, but it is certainly to be compared with such productions as the Finnish Kalevala and the Icelandic Eddas. Guthrie presents a number of important parallelisms to the mysteries of the Egyptians, Chaldeans, and Greeks. According to him, the 12 trials are tests through which the neophytes pass are analogous with the signs of the zodiac. He goes so far as to hazard the speculation that the 12 princes of Xibalba were the rulers of the Atlantean Empire, and their final destruction referred to the tragic end of Atlantis. The Popol Vuh follows the traditional form by involving its principal characters in a series of superhuman and supernatural adventurers. The work is certainly an account of the perilous journey, which is the usual means employed to veil thinly the story of initiation. By comparison with the oral traditions of the northern Amerindian tribes, the legend unfolds what Dr. Paul Radden beautifully calls the road of light. Medicine priests have freely acknowledged that in dreams and trances they could leave their bodies and travel to the abodes of the gods and the dead. To make this journey while still living is initiation, for it is conscious participation in the fact of immortality. In some cults, the neophyte was given sacred drugs to intensify his psychic faculties, as in the case of the notorious peyote sect, or was subjected to hypnotic influence, like the followers of the ghost shirt religion. By some means, a condition of death was simulated, and the consciousness, or superior self, passed through certain internal experiences of which at least a partial memory was preserved. The entire process of creation took place within the green and azure coils of the plumed serpent. On several continents, the serpent was among the important symbols of the initiate priest. Sometimes the serpent stands erect and is crowned, as in Egypt, or it may be winged, as among the Mongolians, or feathered and plumed, as throughout the Americas. Obviously, the natives did not intend to imply that they believed in the actual existence of winged snakes, for no such creatures ever existed among them. The serpent was a wisdom symbol, and when plumed, it meant that wisdom had been given wings and had become spirit, wisdom, or illumination.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. They make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you could do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your comments, so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.